Are you a flavor enthusiast?
If so, the Keurig Green Mountain Sensory Test Center wants to hear from you.
We are looking for consumer panelists to test a variety of food and beverage products from Green Mountain Coffee and other brands.
This would be a periodic and ongoing opportunity at our test facility in Waterbury Center.
No experience necessary.
Plus, for every 30-minute session you attend, we'll give you an Amazon gift card.
Just for giving us your opinions.
How sweet is that?
Want to learn more?
Give us a shout at 802-882-2703.
It's time to get the story behind the story. Interviews with newsmakers, newsbreakers, and your phone calls. Radio Vermont presents The Mark Johnson Show.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the program. Thanks for tuning in. What a beautiful day today. Thanks for spending part of it with us. Coming up on the program today, we'll take your phone calls, and we'd love to hear from you at 244-1777. That's our local number in central Vermont. You can also reach us toll-free at 877-291-8255. Some of the items that I hope to get to here before we wrap up at 11 o'clock, I want to chat a little bit about the decision by Scott Milne last night to not attend the debate in Essex. An interesting, so that's page one. Page two, I have an interesting historical revision that has happened involving Bernie Sanders' 1981 mayoral race. And I have a really interesting piece with that talks about the situation in Ferguson and also relates it back to the importance of the open Internet. Also, if we get an opportunity, I want to share with you a little bit of Jim Jeffords' announcement back in 2001 where he decided to leave the Republican Party, and we can chat a little bit more about his life and legacy as we proceed. Our phone numbers on the program are 244-1777. That's our local number in central Vermont. Toll free, you can reach us at 877-291-8255. We're going to begin this morning and welcome to the airwaves and welcome here to our plush studios here in Waterbury. Gary Lee Miller is joining us. Gary is a writer, lives in Montpelier, and has a really interesting book out, a collection of short stories called Museum of the Americas. He's written a couple of novels before, also covers the music scene for 7 days, and he's also a member of the Society for Commercial Archaeology. We'll get to that little nugget here as we proceed. And Gary, thanks for joining us. How are you this morning?
I'm great, Mark. Thanks so much for having me.
All right, so I know I shouldn't do this to you, and this is a terrible thing to do because I was going to tell you that I was going to do it, but we got to talk about your name here. This is great. Gary Lee Miller. Who is Gary Lee Miller?
Well, Gary Lee Miller is actually a pseudonym. My real name is actually Gary Gerard Miller, and I had written before this book was published as Gary Miller, and it's impossible to get a URL. There's a rather unsavory, in my opinion, congressman from California named Gary Miller, and he kind of dominates the internet. If you do a Google for Gary Miller, you're going to find him. I didn't like the name Gary Gerard Miller. I never liked that middle name, even though my parents gave it to me, and I love my parents. But I had an old girlfriend who used to call me Gary Lee, and so I thought, why not, for the purpose of the book? And lo and behold, GaryLeeMiller.com was available, and if you go there, you can, you know, find out a little about my book and read my blog and etc. So yeah, that's me for the purposes of the book, but you can just call me Gary if you want.
Okay. All right. We'll just go with Gary or Gary Lee. All right. 244-1777, toll free 877-291-8255. Tell me about your writing before Museum of the Americas.
Well, Mark, I've been, you know, writing since I was probably an undergrad in college back in the 80s. And in the early 90s, I went to Vermont College of Fine Arts, which was then just Vermont College. At the time, it was part of Norwich University. And I had a great time there. I got an MFA in fiction writing, and I really started writing seriously. I wrote two novels and a lot of stories during that, not specifically during the Vermont College time, but from then into the 2000s, I got a representation from a New York agency for my two novels. And, you know, they said, oh, this is going to be a happy ending to this story, and these novels are going to be published, but sadly that never happened. You know, I had been compiling some stories into a collection, and added some new stories, and that's where this book came from.
Mm-hmm. So this is different than what you've done before.
Well, it's different in that's the first book I've ever published, so that's very different.
But short stories.
No, I've been writing stories all along since I started writing fiction back in the 80s. I've been working on short stories, and I really kind of did a lot of that work at Vermont College, too. So the story part isn't new, but the collection is new.
How long a period of time are these stories collected over?
Gosh, I could be 10 years, you know. Some of the stories may be even older, but I'm constantly, you know, revising, and I'm writing new stories, and I'm, you know, so some of the stories are fairly new, and some are a little older.
Okay. Redemption seems to be one theme. Are there other sort of overriding themes in this book, Gary?
Well, I guess what interests me to write about fictionally is kind of people in situations that you might pass by and kind of ignore and just not notice, frankly. I don't write a lot about contemporary culture, but I'm very fascinated by the past, you know. I used to do a lot of work at in Boston at the American Experience, the U.S. History Program. I did a lot of writing for their website, and I became really fascinated with history. But also, I have a real strong interest in kind of Americana roadside culture, old motels, old neon, old hand-painted signs. That's where the Society for Commercial Archaeology comes in. It's an organization that's dedicated to the preservation of roadside Americana, and I've been a member of that for a long time. Although I think technically I need to renew my dues or they're not going to send me the newsletter anymore. Mm-hmm. So in my spare time, I spend a lot of time, you know, shooting photos of old neon signs and old hand-painted signs on the sides of buildings. You know, that's a part of my travels wherever I go. And as I do those things, I start to think and wonder, you know, who are the people who lived here? You know, what might their lives have been like? And it's just fascinating to me, and it's really fun to just, you know, look at something and make up a story.
When did your interest in that start?
You know, to be honest, I've probably never told this story before, but I'll tell it now. When I was a little boy, you know, 4 years old, I had an imaginary friend. He was a mouse, and his name was Wilbert. And he lived in the abandoned drive-in restaurant at the outskirts of my town. It was this little place where, you know, probably back in the 50s, you know, maybe they even had waitresses on roller skates. I don't know. But, you know, you'd drive up in your Chevy or your Ford and, you know, get a burger and a milkshake. And by the time I was a little kid, it was abandoned. But I was fascinated by that place. We'd drive by it, and so I made up this little guy who lived in there, and he was my companion for quite a while when I was a little kid.
Wow.
Well, I can't believe I told that story in public.
Where'd you grow up?
I grew up in northern Pennsylvania, right along the New York border, about an hour and a half due south of Buffalo, a little town called Eldred, Pennsylvania. Shout out to Eldred, the greatest town to be raised in ever. 800 people in a little Pennsylvania valley. Everybody knew everybody. Every kid played together every day. I mean, in a lot of ways, it was idyllic. I'm very, very glad for the raising I got there. That was actually where I got my first education as a storyteller. My dad liked to visit the bar on regular occasions. And from age 5, I was sitting on a bar stool next to him, sipping an orange pop. I found that if I went underneath the bar, I could harvest some chewing gum. So I always had a supply of that.
Nice.
Really nice. And I listened to these guys tell amazing storytellers, some of the best storytellers that I've heard, up to and including, you know, the fantastic published authors that I've heard read their work and that I've read today. These guys had timing, they had humor, they had everything, and they would tell, you know, a lot of hunting stories, a lot of fishing stories, a lot of stories, you know, funny things that happened at work or jokes they'd, you know, tall tales kind of they'd make up about each other just to, you know, bust each other's chops. And I think that's where I really got my first storytelling education.
Wow. Tell me about your mom and dad.
My dad was the son of a coal miner. My grandfather unfortunately died of black lung before I had a chance to meet him, my father's father. And my father was raised in the Hollow in Pennsylvania, way up in the woods in a little house in the middle of an oil field with six brothers and sisters. He had an eighth grade education, and he worked at Ethan Allen on the factory line for about 38 years, I think. And my mom was a registered nurse. She worked in the emergency room when I was a kid, and I was one of the first people in my family to go to, you know, a 4-year college or anything like that. But my parents were a big part of my life, and I really, they're both gone now, but I do want to, you know, thank them for making, I feel like they made this book possible in a lot of ways, so.
Mm-hmm. When you say your dad worked at Ethan Allen, tell me, what do you mean by that?
I mean, for 38 years, he put recliner rockers in boxes, day in and day out. My dad was one of the hardest working people I've ever met. I remember him going to, you know, to work just sick as a dog. And when I was probably 12 or 13, they went on strike. They didn't get treated very well at all by the management, and they went on strike for 13 weeks. And I remember one week we finally ran out. We had to take food stamps, and we got $80. And I remember my dad cried, you know, because he didn't want to do that. You know, mm-hmm. He had his pride.
Mm-hmm. Do you know how old your grandfather was when he died of black lung?
I don't. I would imagine in his 50s, late 50s, maybe.
Yeah. And I guess your dad was lucky he didn't follow in that trade.
Yeah. His, you know, a lot of the coal miners who were in central Pennsylvania moved north to the oil fields. People don't know there were big oil fields in northern Pennsylvania. At the turn of the 20th century, Bradford, Pennsylvania was the biggest producing oil field in the world. And that's where Pennzoil got its start. That's
right.
Where Kendall Motor Oil got its start. There was actually a little, refinery in my town called Eldred Refinery. And it produced Betty Blue gasoline. And so the Betty Blue is the bar that I used to hang out at where all the factory workers would go, where I used to go with my dad.
Where you got the gum on the floor.
Where I got the gum. No, under the bar, Mark.
Under
the
bar.
Floor. I'm
okay.
A little bit.
Oh,
you know.
All right. Okay,
yeah.
Good. I'm glad I clarified that, because yeah. I thought you were picking it off the floor, Gary. Gary Miller is the author of Museum of the Americas. He's a Montpelier writer. If you'd like to join us, you can at 244-1777, toll-free 877-291-8255. You said you'd like to focus on people that you would ordinarily walk by. What is it? Why? What's the interest of that?
You know, I just feel like there are untold stories of all sorts of people that don't get noticed. You know, we live in a really celebrity-driven culture. We live in a money-driven culture. And there are people who get attention and people who don't, you know. And I grew up among people who don't a lot of the time. You know, I had a lot of friends who lived in trailers or who were really poor. I had a lot of friends whose family had a hard time scraping things together. I've had friends who, you know, been in jail, and, you know, I've had friends who died from, you know, the result of drugs and alcohol. You know, these people, their stories don't get told, but that doesn't mean their lives aren't valid. And they're frankly interesting to me.
Mm-hmm. Give me an idea of a character you write about in your book, in Museum of the Americas, that might fit that kind of a bill.
Well, you know, I guess in the there's a story in here called Certain Miracles, and it's about a young couple. They're headed south from, you know, the Northeast in the middle of winter to try to, you know, kind of make a better lives for themselves. And that's actually based on a true story. Just a little bit. When I was a kid, you know, my dad worked at Ethan Allen, and he worked with a lot of younger people. You know, kids would kind of shuffle in and out of the place. And one time, he grew very fond of these young kids. He was kind of a mentor for them in a little bit of a way. And one time, we were home on Christmas Eve, and a car pulled up in front of the house, and you know, one of these kids got out. He was 18 years old, and he was in the car with his girlfriend, and she was pregnant, and they had in the car everything they owned and their German Shepherd dog. And it was Christmas Eve, and they were broke, And they were driving to Knoxville, Tennessee, because they wanted to, you know, go somewhere where things might be better. And he'd heard he could get a dishwashing job there.
Wow.
And, you know, just the idea of these people, you know. And my father was really, you know, he went out and he talked to the guy for a while and he came back in the house. And I could tell that it really affected him, you know. And I thought, you know, who are these people who, you know, are so desperate to try to find something better in their lives that they'll load everything they got on Christmas Eve, you know, in a car and drive to Knoxville, Tennessee, which from where I lived was probably a, I don't know, 16, 18 hour drive to get a dishwashing job.
Wow.
And so that became the germ of the story, Certain Miracles. But those are the kind of people that I mean when I...
God, sounds like the Jodes or something. I mean,
yeah.
And, you know, the idea that, you know, that your father, I'm sure, sort of felt a little bit helpless, too.
Yeah. It was hard. I could tell, you know, it was very hard for him to look at that.
244-1777 is our local number. Toll-free 877-291-8255. What is the Museum of the Americas?
Well, I wish I could answer that question, but I can't. But I'll tell you a story about it anyway. When I enrolled in Vermont College,
are you running for a political office or something? That's a great answer. I can't answer that, but I'll tell you a story.
You know, that'd good. Be the last thing I'd ever do. When I enrolled in Vermont College of Fine Arts to study for my MFA, I was living in Arlington, Massachusetts, and so I would come up to Vermont for a 10-day residency and stay at Vermont College and do classes and everything, and then I would go back home and work on my work. And so the first time I came up, I decided, well, I've seen, you know, the interstate. I know what the interstate looks like, but I don't want to drive on the interstate. I want to find out what Vermont looks like. So I got off in White River Junction, and I knew there was a diner there, which, you know, the Four Aces Diner, and I wanted to see that because I heard there was a great diner. So I went and I had lunch, and then I hopped on Route, I think, 14, and I drove up to Barrie. And along the way, as I was driving along, I think it's in Brookfield, I came along this little, you know, yellow painted building with a cupola on top, and out front were a few old, maybe, you know, 30s cars, looking kind of junky, and there was a sign there that said Museum of the Americas. And I thought two things. The first thing I thought was, who put that sign up, and who would be so, not pretentious, I don't know exactly.
Arrogant?
Not arrogant, no, exactly, but, you know, who had this hope that, you know, somehow he would create this Museum of the Americas on Route 14 in the middle of Vermont. And second of all, my thought was, I never want to know what's in this building because I want to make it up. And I didn't write the story probably for 5 years, but it was always churning in the back of my head. And I'm not going to tell you now what's in the story, because I'd like you to find that out on your own if you read the book. But I just thought, wow, there's an opportunity. So that's and kind of the whole book in itself is kind of a bit of a Museum of the Americas. The stories almost all are set in the past, and so I felt like it was an appropriate title.
Mm-hmm. You had a very cool, different kind of book reading at Bear Pond where you had people do what?
Oh, it was awesome. You know, I am fascinated by small museums, too. As a matter of fact, I'll put in a pitch for the Museum of Everyday Life in Glover, which is a great little museum.
That's the name of it?
Yeah, it's a Museum of Everyday Life. It's run by a nurse named Claire Dolan. You should totally have her come on the show and talk with you. And they it's in a barn just our side of Glover, and she really does an incredible job. And each year they dedicate an exhibit to a particular item of everyday life. They've done the safety pin, they've done the match, they've done the pencil, and currently they're doing the toothbrush, and I am proud to say that my vintage toothbrush collection, of which I have an extensive one, is the centerpiece of the exhibit this time.
No way.
So anyway, I started playing with this idea of you know, museums and how to make the Bear Pond. Helen Laban Jordan recently took over the readings there, and she said, you know, we want to do something a little different. We're trying to figure out different things. I said, let's do a museum. You know, let's do a museum for one night. And what we'll do is we'll have people each person can bring one significant artifact in their lives, you know, and they bring it in, and we can give them a little card, and they can write on that card, you know, this is why this is important to me, and we'll set up a pop-up museum for one night, and one night only, and you can come in, and you can, you know, look at the museum, and then I'll read a little bit from my book, and, you know, sign copies of the book, and it was great. It was really fantastic. People showed up, and...
What'd they bring?
A woman brought, I think the thing that was most affecting and to me, and I think maybe to a lot of people, a woman brought from 1914 or 17, I think, her father's crutches. At the time, her father was 3 years old and he had polio. And she brought in these little wooden crutches. I mean, they couldn't have been more than you know, 20 inches tall.
Oh,
man, you just looked at them and the story was there. A guy, my friend Ken Tonneson, a guy I play music with, brought a tuba that he had dug from the mud of the Allegheny River back in the 70s down in Pennsylvania. My friend John Rosenblum, who lived in the Quarry Hill commune for many years, brought the Dodge, metal Dodge insignia from an old Dodge hippie van from the Quarry Hill commune. I mean, people just showed up with really, it was a really fun night.
Yeah, it sounds really different too. Sounds like too, if I could somehow get your address book, I might have enough guests to last me another 2 years.
Oh yeah, I know a few interesting people.
Wow. Unbelievable. All right, let me maybe put those headphones on here. 244-1777, toll free 877-291-8255. We're talking with Gary Miller about his book, Museum of the Americas. Let's go to Randolph. Justin, good morning.
Morning. Pretty interesting conversation. Another museum, it might be of some interest just to enlighten some people. I was hired about probably 7 years ago with my farm tractor to move a house trailer to Williamstown to a lady that has a doll museum. She's got an old dairy barn, and the whole upstairs of it is one of those big old dairy barns with a huge hay mow. It's full of dolls of all kinds. I mean, the barn's probably 150 feet long and 40 feet wide.
Wow.
And the whole upstairs is just set up with 8-foot banquet tables and just dolls of any imagination. I'm not a doll person, but I was in awe of the amount of dolls. And she ran out of space, so that's why we moved this house trailer into her property. But wow. I don't know if anybody knows about it or if it's even still there. But if anybody's interested in dolls, that's the place to go.
Wow,
that is way back on the hills in Williamstown.
Thanks so much for calling with that, Justin. I mean, what I really love about these museums is they say so much about one individual's interest in this world, you know, and just the idea that, you know, one person could be so fascinated with dolls.
Yeah.
Well, from my own childhood, you know, she had an E.T. doll, and, you know, that, not that I was a kid to play with dolls, but it just brought back a lot of memories, so it was
pretty
neat.
Yeah, it was E.T. memories. It's okay, Justin. Sorry.
Yeah, I had an E.T. lunchbox, too.
Wow, that's great. Thank you for calling. That's a great story.
Really appreciate it, Justin. Thank you.
Okay, have a good day.
I think there's a nonfiction book here, Museums of Vermont, maybe, somewhere.
There are little museums. There's also the Museum of Industrial Design in Waitsfield, which is run by Dave Sellers, the architect. And it's beautiful. He's done a fantastic job with lots of, American industrial design artifacts. He just did a big exhibit on human-powered vehicles with really cool bicycles and things like that. So that's another one worthy of checking out.
We'll take a quick break here. We'll come back, continue our discussion. One of the things we're also going to chat with Gary Miller about is experience with writing and helping some that are in recovery as well, too. A really interesting project. We'll talk a little bit more about his Museum of the Americas. He's going to do a short reading from it as well for us, too. We'll take a quick break. We'll be back in just a moment, though.
Capital Grounds.
Do you hear it?
Capital Grounds.
Harmony. It's a good place to connect. There's a sense of harmony. It makes me feel good when I see people come in and realize that we live in a real community. We're here for you, and you're here for us. It's connected. It's all connected. We've got great coffee. We have coffee from all over the world, Bali, Sumatra,
Ethiopian. We have Central and South American coffees, some of the best in the world. We roast those up at Capital Grounds. Most of the coffees we offer are organic, and many of them are fair trade as well. We're trying to keep those farmers in business. It's got to be sustainable. From their community to ours. That's how you make the world go round.
Capital Grounds.
27th State Street, downtown Montpelier.
Capital Grounds.
I love this place.
If you're thinking about purchasing a Honda, Subaru, or Toyota, think again and think Formula Nissan. Hi, I'm Jack Castellaneta, Vice President at Formula Nissan in Berlin. Nissan is growing, and so is Formula Nissan. Before you buy any other brand, here are three reasons to check out Formula Nissan today. Number one, Formula Nissan's incentives. 0% for up to 72 months to qualified buyers on select models or up to $5,000 in rebates. This saves you thousands over the competition. Number two, Formula Nissan's huge inventory. With over 132 new and pre-owned vehicles in stock and incoming, we have the vehicle for you. And if you don't see it, it doesn't mean it's not incoming. Number three, Formula Nissan's deal. Don't make a $1,000 mistake by not shopping at Formula Nissan. We want your business, it's important to us, and we'll do whatever it takes to earn it. Lower payment, more money for your trade, or lower finance rate? Formula Nissan can do that. Stop by today or check us out online 24/7 at formulanissan.com and let us show you how easy it is to do business here.
Isn't it amazing how kids grow?
I know, I can barely keep up.
Did you know 80% of the brain develops by age 3?
What? Sarah's 3, and she doesn't even know the alphabet yet.
It's not just the ABCs. It's social, behavioral, everything. And even here at the park, her brain is forming 700 new connections every second.
How can I keep up with that?
Read to her. Sing, play. There's a lot to learn for both of you.
Let'sGrowKids.org, because every child deserves a solid start. Check out the video and get informed at Let'sGrowKids.org.
Are you age 65 or retiring soon? Vermonters retiring soon or just becoming eligible for Medicare can find out more about Medicare and Medicare products from Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Vermont. Here's how. Attend an informational session to learn more about health after retirement, including information on Vermont Medigap Blue, affordable Medicare supplemental coverage offered through Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Vermont's affiliate, the Vermont Health Plan. Statewide sessions run through early December. For more information or to RSVP, call Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Vermont's Medicare specialist, Jill, at 802-371-3299. You can also email medigap@bcbsvt.com. You can also meet one-on-one with Jill on Tuesdays and Thursdays at Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Vermont's Information and Wellness Center at South Burlington Blue Mall, or by appointment on Mondays and Wednesdays at their Berlin headquarters. Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Vermont is an independent licensee of the Blue Cross and Blue Shield Association.
Hey, guys!